Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome into another edition of the Chip Williams Podcast. I am excited about this one as I am joined by Andrew Ford, who writes way too many places for me to name off, because if I named all of them off, it would take up his entire time. Andrew Ford, how are you doing, sir? Hey, Andrew Ford, my man, how are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Hey, listen, I'm going to restart it just so I can edit this front part out. I don't know why it was giving me trouble there. All right, so I'm going to go silent for about 2 seconds, and I'll just restart it.
Okay.
All right, and welcome into the Chip Williams Podcast. I appreciate everyone for listening. Got some good feedback recently on how the podcast has been going. I'm extremely excited about this one. One of my favorite basketball writers that is out there joining me today. His name is Andrew Ford, and if I told you everywhere Andrew Ford writes, we would take up the entire podcast. So I will just tell you that he writes with me at grizzlybearblues.com, and he does a ton of other stuff. Mr. Ford, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Chip. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I appreciate you carving out a few minutes in your schedule to jump on with me.
Glad to do it.
So you want to start with some Grizz? We'll just knock that out and then move on. Okay, perfect. So I guess the big topic that everyone wants to talk about right now is what's going to come up at the trade deadline. We're about 2 weeks out. The Grizzlies certainly have plenty of liquid assets that they could move if they choose to. They've got guys on expiring deals. They've got guys that, you know, a couple of teams maybe that are trying to push over the top. Maybe they think this guy could play a role, whether it be a Courtney Lee, Matt Barnes, Mario Chalmers, someone like that. Do you see this team making any moves before the deadline?
Well, you know, I think much like past seasons, they'll weigh their options and they'll look out there and they'll see, okay, well, you know, it's all about the right opportunity for them. Luckily, I mean, they've been pretty savvy the past several years in the trade market. And I think, you know, someone like Courtney Lee or Jeff Green, I think they could be shipped off to a contending team. And, you know, one that's been talked about is maybe Oklahoma City for Courtney Lee. But I don't know that that their value matches up with what the Grizzlies are going to ask for guys like that. For instance, I think, you know, the Grizzlies could ask for a first-round pick as well as a player for Courtney Lee. And I just don't know that Lee is valuable enough to swing a first-rounder from one of those teams. Maybe if you get someone like, I said, the Thunder, pretty desperate, then maybe. But it seems like a stretch to me. Other than that, obviously I don't think the Grizzlies are going to make any big moves. I think, you know, it's something where it's pretty well established who the top teams are in the West and the East now. And I don't think any move necessarily is going to position the Grizzlies any better to make a run in the playoffs, but a move certainly could position them better for the future. So if there is a move out there where they could get a draft pick foreseeably, preferably a first round one, I mean, that would be nice. Also, you know, it'd be interesting to see if they'd look at a guy like Morris and Phoenix, you know, with him, Hornacek, with him out of the picture. Markieff Morris seems to be rejuvenated, seems to, you know, be back in the swing of things and producing more. It would be interesting to see if the Grizzlies would try to go after him and what that would cost. But it's tough to predict even right now, getting closer to the deadline. So I guess we'll see how things shake out. My personal opinion is this is a deadline that I really don't see the Grizzlies doing much of anything.
Okay, a few things you brought up there that I kind of want to talk about. I like one thing that you said, that the Grizzlies have been pretty savvy, honestly, in the trade market over the last few seasons, especially when it comes to making, you know, minor improvements or guys that are maybe better fit to the roster. The one that everybody points to is the Jeff Green move, and I think that kind of gives the Grizzlies may be a bad name, or the Grizzlies front office, like, oh, they just blow trades. You know, they don't know what they're doing. Well, if you'll remember, the Courtney Lee trade, I thought worked out fantastic. The Matt Barnes trade has worked out extremely well. The Mario Chalmers trade, extremely well. So I don't think it's fair to just point to the Jeff Green trade and say, oh, well, I don't trust the Grizzlies front office if they're going to go out and make a move, because, yeah, sure, they swung and missed, and really they swung and missed at something that will hurt them years down the road when they eventually have to give up that pick. But other than that, they've done a really nice job of putting a few complimentary pieces around the roster. Wouldn't you agree?
I would totally agree. I think, you know, even going after a guy like Jeff Green, you missed, but I get the logic. I mean, you're trying to put together
right.
a contending team. Your roster is aging. I mean, I think the Grizzlies are the second oldest roster in the league currently. I get going out when they did, getting a guy like Jeff Green and hoping a scorer who's pretty versatile like him could put them over the top. Obviously, it did backfire, but you mentioned several other deals that have panned out. Really, with that kind of success rate, it's hard to just sit back and just criticize the Jeff Green deal over and over and over without giving props to the front office for accomplishing what they have.
Yeah, I completely. If you're hitting on 3 out of 4 trades, that's a really good that's a really good rate. That's a successful rate for any general manager. I do want to ask you about Markieff Morris, because I think his trade value is probably as low as it's ever been in the NBA, just because I think he's certainly got a bad rep, the way that he's handled the situation the last, you know, 6 to 10 months or so in Phoenix. And listen, his trade value is low for good reason. He's still a tremendous player, and I don't think anyone would argue that, but he just got a bad attitude, and you don't know, you know, some teams, they don't want to deal with it. But let's just say, you know, the Phoenix Suns get on the phone, they call Chris Wallace, and they say, hey, let's try to work out a deal, Markieff for Jeff Green. We think maybe Jeff's a little bit better of a fit, or worst-case scenario, he's an expiring contract, and Markieff still has 3 years left on his deal. Is that a player you'd be interested in adding to the Grizzlies?
Absolutely. I think he has more upside than Jeff Green. I think if you – you know, if the mood strikes him, which is dangerous, I think it's he can do a lot more for this team. I think he could, play more of the four and give the Grizzlies more options there than obviously Jaeger has been kind of reluctant to use JaMychal Green in maybe his best role. Maybe he'd use Markieff Morris more. And, you know, having a guy like that longer term than Jeff Green's expiring might not be a bad thing if you can get him to come in and
right.
buy into the system and surround, presumably, if we re-sign Conley, if you can get him to surround Conley and Gasol, those are three good starting pieces right there. I mean, you're not starting completely over with that, and that's something to build on at least for several years.
Right, and it doesn't totally blow your cap either. His contract's only $8 million. So you could still have $14 to $16 million, depending on what you do, to even go add then a fourth piece maybe for the future. So I realize $14 to $16 million doesn't get you what it would have gotten you a year or two ago, but it can still get you a player. I mean, you can still go out and get somebody. So, yeah, I think sound logic. I have no idea if that's going to happen, if Chris Wallace is going to call the Suns or the Suns are going to call Wallace, because I'm confident teams around the league that would like to add Markieff Morris, especially if they can buy low for a guy that's a really good player and is on a really good contract. You just wonder about, is he going to buy in? Is he going to be happy without his
right.
brother? But I think that, right, that's what all that stems from, right?
Right, and I suspect that his trade value is going to go back up. I don't think
right.
he's going to sit around and continue to sulk now that the coach has been fired. As I alluded to earlier, he has performed better, you know, in a brief stint since Hornacek is gone. And who knows, maybe he reverts back to what he's been most of the season and falls out of favor. But at least right now, I think he knows that he's trying to position himself to maybe go to a different team and to get suitors interested in him again. And to do that, he's got to show a willingness to fit into the team. He's got to show a willingness to play the role that his coaches want him to play. And I think he's off to a good start. Obviously, you need to see more. It's an interesting dynamic, him having a twin and seemingly being so tied in with him that who knows? I mean, maybe he'll be always wanting to be reunited with his twin, which is interesting. You know, you don't see that a lot in the NBA, so that's kind
right.
of a unique situation. And I guess you can't know, but that's something, if I was Chris Wallace, I would be willing to pull the trigger on and find out if the right deal presented itself.
Yeah, you don't see Robin crying because he's not getting to play with Brooke Lopez or vice versa. It is weird. First of all, you don't see a lot of twins or brothers in the NBA, period. But then, you know, if you split up, you split up. You know, I don't know. The whole thing is a little weird to me.
Get it. As a twin myself, I get I get the attachment to, you know, your twin. It is a little bit different than just a brotherly relationship. I mean, you know, I get people all the time asking me, well, what's it like to be a twin? It's not that different. It's still just a brother. I also have an older brother, so I can have a little bit of comparison. But I do get the allure of you grew up doing everything together, particularly with them. My brother and I had different interests. For them, it seems like, you know, they've been playing basketball on the same team for their entire lives. That's all they knew. And really, who knows? Maybe things behind the scenes just didn't shake out well when they got rid of his brother. Maybe it's a matter of he just doesn't like the way they handled it as much as the fact that they just got rid of him. And if it's that he doesn't like how they handled it, then maybe, you know, you don't put as much blame on Markieff. Who knows? Again, it's interesting. As you said, there's only, I guess, a pair of two sets of twins in the league. I mean, you just don't see it a lot. It's kind of unprecedented.
Right.
So who's to say what Markieff would do on a different team?
So does twin Andrew Ford like break down football tape? Is that his thing?
No, he actually does not watch sports at all.
Okay, fair enough. I didn't know if he was like the same thing, just with a different sport or something like that.
No, he's musical. It's just completely different.
Gotcha. Okay, last trade Grizz question, and we'll move on to a couple other different Grizz topics. But I think the consensus that most people have about what the Grizzlies should be looking for, and you alluded to it a little bit earlier, they have to have the future in mind, because I think the last few seasons, you know, the Jeff Green trade being a prime example, they've just kind of punted on the future and went all in for the moment. Well, the way the Warriors are playing, the way the Spurs, you know, even the Thunder, the Cavs, I just don't know that the Grizzlies, there's a trade that could put them on the same level as one of those teams. So I think probably they have to have the future in mind, understanding, okay, there's a good chance we're going to have a vastly different team going into 2016-17. Is that fair, especially since you've kind of mortgaged the future a little bit going all in the last few years?
Right. That's how I would look at it. If I'm in the Grizzlies front office, I am definitely looking forward now rather than in the present. I think, given what you said, given the way the Warriors are performing, the Spurs, the Cavs, even, you know, the Thunder and maybe even the Clippers, it's going to be tough, given the Grizzlies' current group, to finally get over that hump and win a championship. I mean, you could argue that the Grizzlies have never been more than fringe contenders, and even less so now. And so, you know, you're in a position where you're trying to lock up Conley after this season. And I think to do that, you really have to start positioning yourself to build around Conley and Gasol, because if you don't start now, their window is finite as well. I mean, maybe their window is the next 3, 4, 5 years to build a team around them. That's not a particularly long time, and you have to hit on a lot of right moves to get back to where the Grizzlies were when they made the Western Conference Finals. So, yes, you definitely have to start looking forward and to the future, and I don't know whether that's acquiring draft picks or just acquiring younger talent on good contracts, or, you know, heaven forbid, finally getting your young players healthy and actually playing them.
Hey, what a great transition. Because I want to talk about Jordan Adams, Andrew Elmark. I want to start with Adams. Where are we with Jordan Adams? Because I think this time last year, Vince Carter had just gotten hurt, and there was kind of this clamor of, okay, let's go ahead and get Adams out on the floor, you know, get him 7, 8, 9 minutes here and there, just to get him a little, you know, get his feet wet, so maybe going into this season, he can start playing 12, 15, 18 minutes, and then maybe even going into next season, you pencil him in as a guy that might play 20 minutes or even possibly step in and try and start him if Courtney Lee were to leave in free agency. Well, that's just been completely derailed because Jordan's been hurt pretty much the entire season. We haven't gotten to see him, but I think two games is what he's played in, and that was at the very beginning of the season. He's had to have knee surgery. Can the Grizzlies move forward with Jordan Adams in their future plans, or are we to the point where if he develops into something, it's just kind of gravy?
I'm to the point, I think you still have to incorporate him in future plans, whether that's you think he could eventually be your starting two guard or, you know, an off-the-bench combo guard. I'm not to the point of giving up on a guy who's played or just been in the league 1.5 seasons. But with that said, I mean, he is behind the eight ball. It's tough to go through two entire seasons and not play and then come back in your third season and get major minutes. And he certainly wasn't helped by being hamstrung last year, you know, with Jaeger not playing him. But he is where he is. He's injured. Now it's a matter he's got to get on the court. And if he can't get on the court, he can't show his value. And the Grizzlies aren't going to re-sign him if he can't show his value. That's just a fact. And the Grizzlies have shown in the past that they're more than willing to move on from young guys who they just drafted 2 years ago, 3 years ago. They've done it time and time again. And I think he could fit easily if he's healthy. And, you know, his projections coming out of the draft, particularly statistically, were great. I'm not ready to give up on that. I think even when he's played, he's shown some things that the Grizzlies could use a lot of. But he's got to stay healthy, and somehow he has to force Jaeger's hand to get him on the court. And I just don't know that the fit is right for him, and given that fit is so important for young players who aren't necessarily superstars, I don't know that coming into the Grizzlies was a great fit for him. And to me, that's still to be determined. And that could be a huge part of the Grizzlies' future going forward. If he doesn't pan out, you know, it's just one more guy that you have to then add to the roster, bolster yourself around Kame and Gasol.
Okay, you and I are in the same boat here, because I'm certainly far from ready to give up on a 21-year-old who has shown decent promise. I mean, listen, when he got in games last year, he did stuff that's like, okay, you know, if we can get this guy some minutes and he can do this on a more consistent basis, he's going to play a role in the league. You just hope that injuries don't take a career away from the guy. I mean, that would be – I just hate that. You know, but there are so many examples of it happening. And listen, I'm not sure that his injuries are severe or career-threatening or something that he can't come 100% back from. But when they start to pile up, you do start to worry. I mean, that certainly creeps into the back of your mind. But just in terms of the prospects of Jordan Adams, or Jordan Adams, a basketball player, I know something you do a lot is you do a lot of NBA draft work. I know you even do some high school scouting work. Coming out and seeing what you've seen, the little bit that we've seen of him in the D League and the NBA, what do you think Jordan Adams could one day become, assuming that he is able to remain healthy?
Well, I think his floor to me really is a second unit guy who can come off the bench, give you a lot of minutes that way, give you some scoring and burst, and also serve as a bit of a secondary ball handler, which, as you know, the Grizzlies have needed for years. Right now, you know, they have basically Conley and Chalmers. You need more than that, really. You need other guys who can initiate offense, and I think Jordan Adams is a guy who can initiate his own offense, whether that's out of the pick and roll, isolation, or even post him up. I mean, he's a bigger shooting guard. I think he can develop a game down low like that. And I think that's kind of his floor. His ceiling would be, you know, you get him in the starting lineup with Conley and Gasol. You let him work off of those guys. You have him in the corner. You have him on the wing, on the weak side, and you let him get some easy buckets. You let him get fed for open threes, open jumpers, and he kind of builds from there, and his confidence grows. And if he could develop into that secondary ball handler to play off of Conley, where you could you know, a lot of times now in NBA you see ball reversal just side to side to side, looking for that side pick and roll to create some space and some drives and lanes to the basket. He could be great in that role. He showed it a lot at UCLA, the ability to penetrate and get to the rim, and if he doesn't finish, he gets fouled a lot. You know, those are all great things and attributes you're looking for in your any player, really. And it would just be a real shame, as you said, if his career somehow got derailed because of nagging injuries and he kind of got that label and just didn't get his chance because of that. Because I think he could really turn out to be something useful in this league.
I kind of want to ask you the same thing about Jarrell Martin, because I think, you know, it became pretty clear about a week before the draft, maybe even 3 or 4 days, that if Jarrell Martin was there and there wasn't someone obviously better, there wasn't a big-time slider that was available at 25, that's who the Grizzlies were taking. They were going to select Jarrell Martin. He was not my favorite prospect in the draft. I try my best to really do my homework on the NBA draft and see who I'd like. And Martin, you know, he did some things that you like. He's a pretty good athlete for a guy that his size. He's an explosive leaper. But he just, I don't know. There wasn't one thing you could point to and be like, okay, this is how he's going to stick in the NBA. He's got a lot of work to do, I think, before he's ready to really contribute in the NBA. But I'm curious what you've seen from Jarrell Martin and what you think about his prospect card as an NBA player.
I didn't love the pick when it was made, and I still don't love it now. Obviously, I haven't changed because he hasn't gotten on the court because of injury. But I will say this. I'll praise the front office for knowing the guy they want and sticking with him despite, you know, any outside chatter or noise. I mean, I think that's respectable. And, you know, I think what they see in him is, for so many years, a tweener has been seen as a negative thing, and that's kind of what Jarrell Martin is. But you see it every season, you know, progressively, that more and more tweeners are finding their way onto the floor. They're playing in versatile lineups. And the Grizzlies, that's something they haven't been able to do. They haven't been able to put versatile lineups on the floor. They haven't been able to switch pick and rolls defensively. They haven't been able to put the ball in several different players' hands offensively and let them make a move. And, you know, I think that's what they're trying to do. I think Jordan Adams and Jarrell Martin both tell me that they're trying to get guys who can create some of their own offense but also fit in and be very complementary pieces within a modern offense that can play against the Golden State Warriors, can play against the Thunder, can play against a lot of these quicker, rangier teams that can switch a lot and just have so much versatility, because that's just where the league is trending. So I don't love that Jarrell Martin, you know, he wasn't great at any one thing to me, and his shooting is very obviously a concern. You would like to see him be able to consistently knock down three, something he wasn't able to do at LSU. Maybe he can work on that. Shooting is always iffy, but I do think that he could be useful on this team. I think if he was healthy, I think he could be better, possibly better in Jermichael Green's role than Jermichael Green is, you know, as an energy guy around the rim, getting rebounds, setting picks, you know, making mid-range jumpers. I mean, of course, Jermichael Green and his role can minimize as Ryan Hollins continues to get 10-day contracts, but I think there's some ability to mix and match Martin in certain lineups, and I always think that's a valuable thing in today's NBA. So I don't know. I'm less, you know, bullish about his long-term prospects, but I see where the Grizzlies were going with that pick, and they need him to get healthy too. You know, you just can't keep wasting draft picks on guys who can't stay healthy, and a lot of that's luck, but it doesn't change the fact that you need to start hitting on those draft picks now to prepare for building around Tommy Gasol.
No, I think that's a good point, that in theory, you know, what Jarrell Martin could become, it makes sense, because you mentioned he's kind of a tweener. Well, that's great. That's what a lot of these NBA guys are now, especially when you want to space the floor, have versatile lineups, kind of like you said. The pick makes sense. And I think, Andrew, you know as well as I do that one thing the Grizzly fans, they love to do, and they're already starting to do it with Jordan Adams, we should have picked Rodney Hood. Rodney Hood was on the board. I can't believe we wasted this pick on Jordan Adams. I'm still waiting for it to happen with Larry Nance Jr. because he's really good. And he went two picks after Jarrell Martin. I'm waiting for that to happen where they figure out, oh, Larry Nance Jr. really good. We didn't pick him. It's silly. It's silly that that happened.
I think that's interesting to me always when that happens because, as I said earlier, I don't think there is enough, you know, weight on fit in the NBA. And Rodney Hood might not even have gotten off the bench in Memphis.
Exactly.
I mean, there's no evidence to say that any Grizzlies coach, you know, either Lionel Hollins or Dave Yeager, was going to play rookies. Like, I can't fathom why people just assume they look at Rodney Hood's stats and they take them in a vacuum and they just say, we'll put him on these 29 other NBA teams and he'll do the same thing. That's not how this works because the surrounding pieces
right.
are different in every organization and things look a lot different. The Grizzlies' offense is by no means Utah's offense. Quinn Snyder is masterful at drawing up plays and getting his wings good shots and Yeager's good at that and not necessarily as good as Snyder in my book. And I get it. I get that Utah runs some traditional offense with two bigs, but it's different. Their bigs can step out a little more. They're a little quicker, a little more versatile. And I don't understand trying to take one player and putting him on another and just saying he would have the same stats. That's always frustrating to me.
You and I are on the same page there. Any final grizz before we move on to some general NBA stuff?
Tough to have any original thoughts on the Grizzlies, honestly.
I know.
We're to the point where we know what the Grizzlies are. We've known what they've been for really the last several years without too much fluctuation. So we're getting to the point where it's going to be in a transition period where there's a little more to talk about. But right now, you know, we just keep plugging along with the same guys, and you basically know what you're going to get every night from the Grizzlies. So with that
right.
said, I don't have anything more to mention.
You just got to wait till July. Stuff will happen in July, and then, you know, there will be new – presumably there will be new players, and, you know, they'll just there will be more stuff to talk about, I guess. But, yeah, you're right. And who knows, maybe we get some type of trade, and that will give us a little something to talk about. But, yeah, it is so hard to just have new original thoughts because, first of all, there's a lot of people that cover and write about the team. But also, it's just it's kind of all been said, and it's kind of all been said over the last 5 years. And not necessarily a bad thing. It's just that it kind of is what it is. So I want to talk about this year's rookie class because I don't think people were as excited about this year's rookie class as maybe they were even the one before that with Jabari Parker and Andrew Wiggins. People thought, you know, that's the deepest draft class in a decade. Well, I think this year's draft class, I'm not ready to proclaim it better, but it might be because there are a lot of really good – we know about Towns. We know about Porzingis. But some of these guys that even went later, Devin Booker has been terrific in Phoenix, and he's getting a lot of opportunities to prove that he deserves to play, and he's certainly earning those. Justice Winslow went 10th. Miles Turner went 11th. I mean, they're just players all around this NBA draft. So – Who's impressed you? I know I named off some names. I didn't mean to steal any of your thunder there, but you out of this class?
As you said, Devin Booker's really impressed me. I think a lot of people expected him just to be a spot-up shooter out of college.
Right.
And I wasn't one of those people. When I did my draft write-up of Booker, I said that I think, you know, his dribbling was limited, and he's a guy that still sometimes will take two dribbles and then just settle for an off-balance pull-up rather than continuing all the way to the rim. But he's proved to be a much more well-rounded player than I think a lot of people initially thought, and that's made him very valuable in Phoenix. And I do think he's in a good situation there with some young players and plenty of opportunity to get on the court early and develop, unlike some other guys. For instance, we still don't know much about D'Angelo Russell and Okafor. They've shown flashes. They've had struggles. I don't think either one of them are in particularly great situations right now to thrive. And I'm still not sure Philadelphia is convinced they're keeping Okafor long term. I think what Hinkie's whole plan is just stockpile best available, and then eventually make trades and mold this into something looking more like a team rather than just a hodgepodge of players and a ton of big men. But as for some other guys, Stanley Johnson is another, as well as Miles Turner, who's been coming on lately. He's been shooting the ball pretty well. He's been showing that he can handle the ball on the pick and roll. Obviously, his defense is just stellar. Those are some guys who I've really been impressed with. And you talked about Karl-Anthony Towns, and people know he's impressive, but I'm still not sure people realize that he's really almost a top-tier big in the league as a rookie.
Yeah.
And that's very rare. I mean, he's the whole package. He can play defense. He can post up. He can be in the pick and roll. He can knock down mid-range jumpers. He's got everything you want in a modern big. And I really do think the sky's the limit for him. And as cliche as that sounds, now there – and also Cameron Payne's another guy who's edged out DJ Augustine in Oklahoma City. And he's a guy I liked coming out of college. I really like his ability to push the pace, speed up. And he's very shifty like that. He can push. He can bring it back. He's has a lot of poise for a young guy, and he's also not afraid to take any shot, which I think fits very well with just the Thunder's whole mentality. But you know, those are some guys. Even you go a little lower in the draft, and Bobby Portis, you know, when he's gotten on the court for Chicago, has done a lot of impressive things. He went through a little stretch this season where, honestly, I'd watch him, and I'd expect him to hit every shot he took, and I think he expected to hit every shot he took. Just he was on fire, and I think he fits very well in the modern game with his size and skill and ability to do a lot of different things in front court. And as you alluded to, I'm not ready necessarily to say this class is better than the previous class, but, you know, there's – getting to be more and more evidence, it seems like every night, that it easily could be.
Right. I'll give you a couple other guys I've enjoyed watching. I agree with everything you said. Kelly Oubre is someone that probably had top 8 talent or so in this draft, and there were just kind of some questions about him, maybe character-wise, maybe even as a basketball player a little bit, but certainly everyone knew he's a really talented guy. And he ended up getting scooped up by the Wizards at 15. I think he's played well. For some reason, every time I turn on League Pass, the Wizards are playing somebody that I want to watch. So I've watched like 12 Washington Wizards games this year. So I've gotten to watch a lot of Oubre. I've been impressed by him. I think he's going to turn into a really good player. And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, he can't shoot, but he does a lot of other stuff. And I think he's a good candidate for a guy out of this draft that could end up playing for the Grizzlies one day. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. But, yeah, back to Towns.
He's got future Grizzly written all over him.
Yes, absolutely. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson will be a Grizzly at some point. If he doesn't, it's a shame. back to Towns. If I said Towns was one of the 30 best players in the NBA right now, would you think I'm crazy?
I'd have to give it a little more thought, but I really don't think so. Especially if you're picking players to build around right now, he's definitely a top 10 player to build around right now.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's any question to that. I really do think that he's shown early on that he can be that transcendent big. Now Minnesota just has to go out and do the work of surrounding him with better wings and stop playing him with another front court player who clogs up the court because they can't shoot, and a guy like Tayshaun Prince. I mean, maybe that means you have to get rid of Sam Mitchell to get somebody in there who's trying to do some smart things around him. But if they surround him with better wing talent, and I'm a fan of Rubio, and you've got Wiggins, and he needs to improve some in his, you know, efficiency numbers. But that's a really nice core to build with, and making the focal point Towns, that team could be really dangerous in 4 or 5 years.
Okay, last question out of this draft, and we'll move on. D'Angelo Russell and Emmanuel Mudiay, I know they went 5 picks apart, but they were the first 2 point guards taken in this draft, and really, at the time, I think I preferred Moutier over Russell, and I'm not sure that I don't still prefer Moutier over Russell. Where are you with these two guys? Are you clear-cut? Russell's better? You haven't seen enough? Where are you with these two?
I definitely haven't seen enough of Russell. I think him being jerked around the way he has by Byron Scott has been tough for him. There's been some stuff to come out potentially about his work ethic issue. I don't want to get into that because I obviously can't speak to whether that's true or not. I think
right.
he's shown flashes. I think he has more upside offensively, but Moutier might have more upside in all. One thing I'll say about Moutier is I love his ability to penetrate, but my goodness, he cannot stay on the ground when he's trying to make a pass on a driving kick, and he can't okay. continue to do that. He has to stay
right.
on the ground and keep his dribble alive until he sees an actual option. He can't do the high score college thing where you're good enough and the defense is slow enough to jump in the air and find somebody once you get in the air. He's got to be better at breaking defenses down that way, but early, I like the early returns on Moutier. He's clearly got a lot of growing to do. But Russell, to me, I can't get a good feel for him because I struggle to get a good feel for a lot of the Lakers just because I'm still not sure what they're doing under Byron Scott, as I think most people would agree with that.
No, I agree. That's totally fair. The only one. Larry Nance, he's going to be a player. That's about the only thing I've learned. Like he's going to be an NBA player. He does some good things. I'm very intrigued by how he developed. Because, listen, I'm not afraid to admit, I made fun of him for taking him in the first round at 27. I thought he was clearly a second-round guy and really not even one of the first 10 or 15 picks in the second round. So I just was like, whoa, you know, I came out of left field. But, hey, watching him play, that's why I write and guys are paid to make NBA selections, not me. With the Moutier-Russell stuff, I think that's totally fair that you haven't seen enough of Russell. And, listen, he's playing for Byron Scott. Like, the Lakers have so much stuff they've got to do. So I don't think it's fair. I think 2 weeks into the season, people are declaring D'Angelo Russell a bust. So, let's pump the brakes, and we'll talk again in 2 or 3 years to see, you know, once we have a big enough sample. Kind of general NBA question I want to ask you. This is kind of a big picture thing, and I'm just curious where you are on this. So this year, more so than maybe other any year, maybe I'm just a prisoner of the moment and I'm not thinking this through entirely, but it feels like there are 3 or 4 teams that are challenging for the title, and that's it. It's, you know, OKC. It's the Spurs, the Warriors, and the Cavs. And it's going to be one of those four. And if it wasn't one of those four, I'd be completely shocked. And I am going to follow the NBA and basketball regardless of if it's interesting or not, just because I love the game of basketball. And that's just what I do. I watch a lot of basketball. But I've had people bring up to me that, well, I don't even care until they get to the Western Conference Finals and I've got one of the big three teams in the West, or two of those three, playing against each other, and then the Cavs probably dominating whoever they're going to play in the Eastern Conference Finals, probably the Raptors, something like that. Do you get a sense that there's any less interest in the NBA because of the way the Warriors are dominating and the Spurs and the Thunder and the Cavs?
I don't know about widespread. I think I have a little bit less interest this season just in general in the broad picture of who's going to win it all. Now, I can find different storylines to focus on and young players and things like that.
Right.
I do think it's less interesting. I think I also think it's, like you said, a prisoner of the moment thing. I don't necessarily think it's that much different in the past, where if you sit down and honestly think about it, there are only a handful of teams that could actually win the title. I think most years it appears as if there are more teams that could win the title. But if you look back at history, honestly, it's the same 4 or 5 teams, 3, 4 teams recently. So I do find it just doesn't excite me that the Warriors, it's awesome what they're doing, but them just running through the league just makes me think that it is inevitable that they go back to the championship and they win it. And I just, you know, that storyline has been played out. It played out last year. So to an extent, just as a writer trying to think about different storylines, it does kind of harsh my buzz a little bit, honestly.
No, you're right. And how ridiculous would it be if they end up, you know, losing Harrison Barnes, and then, you know, they're able to ship away Bogut and Iguodala and clear the cap space and somehow get Durant. I mean, it seems like a pipe dream that probably will never happen, but I could not even build a team more perfect than that.
I would stick to my stomach.
I can't even think of that. Yeah.
Stick to my stomach when I read that yesterday. I cannot fathom two of – so you have Steph, Clay, Durant, and, say, Draymond. You could have two of those guys on the court at any given time. That's better than any team in the NBA can throw out. I mean, most NBA teams don't have anywhere near that luxury. They have to play their best players all together. They can play two superstars essentially in one unit and two with another. I mean, it's almost a little bit of a platoon like John Calipari ran at Kentucky a couple years ago. It's insane to think about. And I honestly am not – I don't know how much I believe Durant, you know, could really go to the Warriors. I still see the most viable options for him, honestly, is the Wizards and or staying with the Thunder. And I personally prefer those two. I can't imagine a Warriors team like we talked about with that personnel. I'm sure they wouldn't go 82-0, but I could make a case for it.
They'd come close. They'd come close to going 82-0. Yeah, you're right. I don't think they would, but they'd come close. They're coming close right now, let's be honest. They're coming close to 82-0. Hey, I'll say, too, I never count Pat Riley out in a situation like that. I don't know what their books look like. I don't know what their cap situation is. I just don't count him out. Like, he can do stuff, and all of a sudden, bam, there's Kevin Durant playing in Miami. So, yeah, who knows? It's going to be fun. I would imagine you're probably along the line of thinking that I am. Maybe not, but it just makes so much sense for Kevin Durant to go sign one more year, make one more run at it with the group of guys he's got, and then he can cash in big time once he hits year 10. It seems to make the most sense, right?
I'm with you. I think, you know, rule out the Warriors, every other team in the league. I don't think he's going to go to a team who's going to be able to surround him with a Russ, Westbrook, and with a Serge Ibaka. That's not going to happen. Even, you know, you could go to the Wizards and try to team up with Bradley Beal and John Wall. I don't know if that's as good as surrounding him with Russ and Ibaka. So if I'm him with that continuity is very important. I would stay put, like you said, sign a one-year deal, see how it goes. If it doesn't work then go try your options. But I think he would be really giving it up early if he left the Thunder after this season.
All right, before we move on to college basketball, NBA draft 2016 stuff, I want to give a shout-out to Fan Essentials. Hey, Andrew Ford, how would you like to get $145 worth of NBA gear for just $35? You'd like that, wouldn't you?
I would love that.
Well, you can do it. Just check out fanessentials.net. All you do is subscribe, pick your team, and then every month you will get amazing gear shipped right to your door. They find the sports gear so you don't have to. FanBox comes packed full with amazing gear. It makes a great gift idea for any sports fans, and prices start at just $14.99 and $34.99. So please visit fanessentials.net and sign up. All right, how about that? Live reading. We're doing stuff here at the Chip Williams Podcast. All right, so let's
I had no idea we were going to do ads.
I'm working hard, man. I'm working hard. Let's see. Maybe we can add two or three more in the near future.
More power to you. That's great.
I know that you're the biggest Josh Pastner fan in the world. You really enjoy his X's and O's stuff, things like that. So I'm curious. You must be devastated at the current situation that is Josh Pastner.
Yeah, you know, I'm really crushed for my man Josh. I can't fathom why he's in the situation he's in right now. No, I mean, in all seriousness, I do, you know, part of you feels for him because he is such a nice guy, but everything I've seen from him over the course of years is just so mediocre on the court. And it's for multiple reasons. He's used assistant spots on, you know, a kid's dad. And I can't fault him for doing that as a recruiting strategy, but I don't think that generally pays off a ton as a coaching strategy. In my experience, I think you want to round out your staff with a couple recruiting guys with connections to key areas that you recruit in heavily. You want a great X's and O's guy who can scheme and be the scout guy for your biggest games that you need to win. Skills guy to be able to teach moves, shooting, et cetera, during practice. And you need a head coach who can tie all of that together. And I'm just not sure Josh
right.
can handle all of that responsibility. I don't think he can manage the recruiting as well as the X's and O's and get his head wrapped around all of it. And I think that's shown. And there's certainly got to be fatigue in Memphis with Pastner. I think there has been fatigue with him for several years for at least a fair amount of people, but I think the pressure is really on this season. I don't know what it would take to get him fired, but I think that's the direction we're heading in.
If I had to guess at this point, more than half of the Memphis fan base would probably be in favor of making a change at the head coaching position and getting rid of Josh. And listen, I think it's fair to say that the first 5 years of Josh Pastner, Memphis was a very healthy basketball program. The recruiting was tremendous. They were making the NCAA tournament every year. They were winning the conference. Now, they weren't advancing as deep in the NCAA tournament as maybe their talent suggested that they should have or that maybe fans wanted to. But it was a healthy program. I mean, Memphis was still, they were hanging right around the top 25. They were in the top 25 for a decent part of that. But just the last 2 years are just inexcusable, quite frankly. I mean, they missed the postseason completely last year. And then this season, I mean, they've lost at home to UT Arlington. They lost at home to a sub-500 East Carolina team who had never beaten Memphis before. They lost on their home floor to Ole Miss. And the FedEx Forum used to be a place where you did not come in and win. It almost didn't matter who you were. And it was like that at points under Josh Pastner. I just going in the wrong way. The program trajectory is headed downward. And once that happens for a head coach, it's so hard to get it geared back in the right direction. And you look at the recruiting, they've got one player committed in the class of 2016. He's a good point guard out of Chicago. But you're losing three of your top four scorers as seniors, and your fourth one is Dedrick Lawson, who may be a one-and-done guy. So you may be replacing your top four scorers. It just – the situation's not good, and there's really nothing that gives you hope. So Josh, he's in a very tough spot. Now Tennessee basketball is in a little bit of a different spot. Rick Barnes, how are the early returns on him so far in Knoxville?
I'm liking Rick Barnes early. I think
okay.
he's exactly what the program needed after a pretty tumultuous cycle, to say the least. I think he's at least going to be able to come in, stabilize the program, hopefully not get in trouble for, let's say, 5 years. If he's able to do that and restabilize the Tennessee program, then really he's done
right.
what you hired him to do. And obviously, big win against Kentucky last night, even though Kentucky's in a down year for a mediocre Tennessee team. You always want to beat Kentucky, and beating Kentucky is, you know, that's huge for him in the program in the first year. That helps you sell it to recruits. That helps in a lot of different areas. And I think Rick is in a tough position because the cover is pretty bare. If you look at the average size of Tennessee's starting lineup, for a while, it's gotten better now that they've had a couple guys come back from injury. But early on, the average height of the starting lineup was 6'4". I mean, it's hard to
wow.
do a whole lot of variations of things with that kind of lineup. And it's hard to bang down low. It's hard. I mean, even against Kentucky last night, they got just killed on the glass. They couldn't get defensive rebounds. Kentucky had so many second-chance points. Tennessee just kind of got lucky that Kentucky wasn't hitting them. And I do think Rick Barnes has shown me a lot, though, in his X's and O's. He's running some NBA-level stuff, and you don't see that a ton in college. A lot of times, that's why a lot of people think college basketball is unwatchable. I do think college coaches get an unfair rap. I think a lot have said, well, they don't do a lot. that's not entirely fair. You might just not necessarily know what to look for. They're not doing the same things as NBA teams, but they are running plays, and they do have a purpose generally on offensive possessions. And Rick Barnes kind of takes that to a new level. I mean, he's running, like I said, just a lot of stuff that NBA guys are running, and that's impressed me. And I think a guy like Rick Barnes with his resume will be able to recruit even to a place like Tennessee, and just hopefully Tennessee fans will have some reasonable expectations for Barnes, which Tennessee fans and reasonable expectations don't exactly mesh together.
I was just about to say, come on, you're asking way too much of the Tennessee fan base. I'm a Tennessee football fan, and the reasonable expectations with Tennessee, it doesn't really happen. But, you know, I'll be honest, a lot of people that I know that live in Knoxville or that are Tennessee fans, I think they're very realistic about the situation that Barnes took over. And they understand that, listen, and I thought your analysis was spot on. This guy just has to stabilize the program, because this program has just been thrown through the crapper, quite frankly, for the last 5-6 years. I mean, with the way the Bruce Pearl situation worked, the way Konzo Martin worked out, the way Donnie Tindall worked out, I mean, they just need somebody to come in for a few years, replenish the talent base, make sure that program just, you know, stays squeaky clean. And I think Rick Barnes is probably the ideal guy to do that. Hey, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you if you thought there's any chance, if Josh Pastner gets fired, that Bruce Pearl takes the Memphis job.
I've been asked that several times before, and I cannot speak to whether he would or would not take the job, but I will say I think Bruce Pearl would kill in a job like Memphis. He recruits better than most coaches, I would say, given, you know, he had somewhat limited resources at Tennessee. He's got very limited resources, I would say, at Auburn, even though they're improving their resources. And he's still reeling in 4- and 5-star kids. And I think just this, imagine what he could do at a program like Memphis with their history, with their passion, with their arena, and all the support around the program. And he also has a knack for bringing in the right guys to surround him with. He knows what it takes to win in college, and that doesn't involve him doing everything, but involves surrounding himself with a lot of, you know, guys with a lot of coaching experience, with a lot of areas of expertise. And he definitely did that at Tennessee, and I think that's something he's carried with him to his next gig at Auburn. I don't know how much success he can have at Auburn. I don't see that as a long-term gig for him. So if the Memphis job did open up, I think Memphis should pounce on him, you know, offer him whatever you can to get him there, because I really do, and I'm biased, but I do believe a lot in him and his strategy.
No, there's no reason not to believe in him. I mean, he has done amazing work everywhere he's been. In Memphis, I think the city of Memphis is probably one of the 10 best cities in the country in terms of producing high school basketball talent year in and year out. Now, a lot of it, I don't know, some of it may be untamed talent. You got to coach them up a little bit. But the raw, physical, athletic basketball talent that comes out of the city of Memphis, it's just amazing, the amount of guys that go sign D1. I mean, you look at just the last few years, you've had, you know, Joe Jackson, Chris Crawford. This past year, you had Scott Labissiere, Laron Black, Chris Chioza. I mean, it's just every year there are major, high major guys coming out of the city of Memphis. And at one time, Pastner was getting all those guys. Well, he's let Chioza slip. He's let Laron Black slip. The kid from Bolton this past year that's going to go to UNLV, he's starting to let a few of those guys out. And I think Bruce would probably do a good job of keeping those players in the city. I do want to ask you about a former Tennessee coach, and I know we're running out of time, so we'll run through these last few kind of quickly. But Tennessee fans root for Konzo Martin to do terribly at Cal about as much as they root for Rick Barnes to do very well at Tennessee. It is incredible. Every time that guy, and maybe I just follow the wrong people, but every time Cal loses a game, I hear about it in 10 different tweets from all the people at Tennessee I follow. They cannot stand Konzo Martin. Is that true?
I think that's mostly true. I think there's I think the problem is that there's a pretty loud minority, a very vocal minority, and I think the majority just are either they don't like the left, but they're not very vocal about it, or they get it. I get it. If someone's signing a petition with thousands of signatures wanting me gone after I took a team to the Sweet 16, yeah, you can see me later too. I mean,
right.
I get it. I get why he did what he did, and I think he was probably right to do what he did. I don't understand. Again, psychoanalyzing Tennessee fans is an impossible task, but I don't think that they like anybody who left when they had a choice to stay. It's kind of like Lane Kiffin, and I think some of it is that people say, you know, Alkonzo is overrated. He wrote two eventual NBA players and Josh Richardson and Jarnell Stokes to a deep tournament run. And that can
right.
be tough to argue with. I mean, if you look at that his record that season, the Vols were mediocre that entire season. They barely sweeped in the tournament. They had an easy route to the Sweet 16. I believe they played an 11 seed, a 6 seed, and a 14 seed to make it to the Sweet 16. Now, they did barely lose to Michigan. But listen, from everybody I've talked to, you know, from holdovers, Konzo held a lot of guys over who I worked with on Pearl's staff, on his staff. And from anything I've heard, I heard nothing but good things about Konzo. I heard, you know, the players respected him, his staff respected him, and he demanded a lot of respect. I think his past life experiences helped him. You know, he went through cancer. He was raised in a very rough part of St. Louis. I think he related very
right.
well to the players, and it was tough for them to pull anything over on him. And it was tough to lose a guy like that and just try to go back to the drawing board and start over with Donnie Tindall. But, no, I don't know why people still root for Konzo to fail. I don't understand that. Personally, I wish the guy the best of luck, but I don't think some of these people are ever going to get over it. And I don't think people are going to get over Lane Kiffin leaving. So what can you do?
What can you do? Well, Konzo has a couple of guys that probably are going to go top 10 in next year's NBA draft, Jaylen Brown and Ivan Rapp. And he's got two really good players. And I want to get your thoughts a little bit here on the 2016 NBA draft. And I'd like to start with Ben Simmons. First of all, how good is he? And second of all, is there anybody that can challenge him as the number one pick in this year's draft?
I would say the cliche of ceiling is the limit for Ben Simmons, but really maybe his jump shot is the limit for Ben Simmons.
Right.
I think right now he can dominate the college game by getting out in transition, getting all the way to the rim. But in half-court sets, he can be brutal at times, not just because there's really not a ton of space because Johnny Jones doesn't use him properly, but sometimes he's just relegated. He just goes and stands in the corner, doesn't really assert his will on the game. And that was a knock on him in high school, too. And he needs to develop some go-to moves with the ball in his hand in the half court to get himself free in sticky situations. He's got to get better defensively, and I don't think that's something that's been talked about enough. A lot of times he doesn't give a lot of effort defensively, and it's still to be determined what exactly his ceiling is defensively. And, you know, given all of his offensive talents, he doesn't have to be great defensively, but it would be a plus if someone with his body could turn into a plus defender. And I think this coming draft class, you could look back. We might look back and call Simmons the most versatile player in the class, but I'm not sure mm-hmm. that we're going to look back and say he's the best of the class like many are predicting. I'm not to that point. I think he's got a lot of work to do to get rid of the hitch in his shot, make defenses respect him, and he's not big enough to consistently bully guys in the post, so his shot's going to have to get better. Like I said, he's got several areas for improvement. I'm not ready to crown the guy the next NBA star. I think he very well could be, but I need at least one or two more years to see how he progresses year over year, and that'll tell me a lot about what his limit is.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Brandon Ingram is a guy that, listen, I think Simmons is going to be the first pick, and I'm not sure that there's a whole lot that can be done to change that. But I like the prospects of Brandon Ingram. Dragan Bender, I don't know a ton about him, but a lot of really smart people are really high on him. And I like Chris Dunn as well. They are going to be at the top of this draft really good players. It might not be the deepest draft that we've had, but there are going to be players that are going to be good at the top of this draft. I know you got to run because you've got adult stuff to do, and I'm sorry for that.
Fine.
But
I'm good. I'm enjoying
last
this.
Thing. Oh, good. Last thing, how happy are you with the way signing day turned out for the Vols?
I think it's a great class. I think it's not certainly not what everybody necessarily wanted. You always want a top 10 class at Tennessee because that's just one of the many unrealistic expectations here. But I think a lot of needs were filled. I think they finished strong by getting the corner out of Miami and Tyler Byrd, by getting you know, Nigel Warrior, by getting Kongbo. They really nailed everybody who they were supposed to get near the end, and they rounded out strong. I think they're, a top 15 class, and as I said, they fill a lot of needs. They don't have a lot of positions heading into next season where they're going to have to rely on brand-new guys necessarily to step up. It's always nice to continue building that depth for future seasons so you can be a perennial top 15, 20 team. And I think they've done enough to do that. But I think they've gotten great complementary pieces where they needed them in the secondary, on the line, you know, a couple different places. And I think Tennessee fans, they should be really excited heading into next season, given the way today's signing day wrapped up.
I agree. And I think that the difference between this year and maybe the last couple of years was they only had maybe 20-21 spots as opposed to last year. I mean, they were going to sign over 30 guys. So there was obviously more room to take more guys and build up a better class. So in terms of maximizing each spot that you had available, listen, I trust Butch Jones over just about anybody in football to recruit. That guy, he's a machine. I'm excited for it. Listen, next time I'm in Knoxville, I will definitely hit you up, and we'll have to hang or go to a game or something like that.
Absolutely.
I'm up there somewhat frequently. I sure
will.
Hey, tell everybody – where they can follow you on Twitter and read all of your stuff.
All right. You can follow me on Twitter at AndrewFord22, and you can read me at Grizzly Bear Blues, Upside Motor, In Recruit, The Sports Post. You can read me at Today's Fast Break, as well as a couple more places. But those are the primary ones, so we'll stick with those.
Andrew, I could go like another hour, but I know you got to run. So, listen, I really appreciate it. We will definitely do this again soon.
Sounds great. Glad to be on, Chip. Thanks.
Thanks.
Take care.